The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
It's the Pat Kenny Show and it's Anton in for Pat. And just a warning, the topic that we're about to discuss, some people may find difficult or distressing. So this may be a moment to go make a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, as the case may be, because what we're about to discuss is the largest major survey of people who watch online child sexual abuse. And what's remarkable about this survey is it features, I think, 5,000 respondents. So it is a massively encompassing piece of work. And it found a number of things, among them that 70% of respondents first saw images of this nature when they were under 18 years of age themselves. The survey also asked questions about why people look at what they look at, what they choose to look at, whether or not they've tried to stop, and all of the rest of us. Now, to talk more about it and the insights it can offer when it comes to tackling the issue, I'm joined now by ISPCC Senior Policy and Public Affairs Manager Fiona Jennings. Fiona, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Anton.
It's a remarkable piece of work. It's a very harrowing piece of work. Can we start with that first finding, that a large proportion of those surveyed said that they were under the age of 18 when they themselves were first exposed to seeing images of child sexual abuse? Are you surprised by that?
Very surprised by it and very concerned by it as well. First of all, you said at the start how there were so many respondents to the survey, but that 70% of them were just children themselves when they first came across this content, and that a lot of them as well were actually under the age of 13. So I suppose the questions, you know, that I would be asking and that we would be asking in the ISPCC, you know, was how would they have come about seeing this content? You know, is it something they were exposed to by somebody? Did they seek it out? Or, as some of the respondents have reported themselves, that they were initially looking for something else and that led them to seeing online child sexual abuse.
And that in itself is one of the more striking revelations of the survey, because it found that more than half, the majority of people who watch online child abuse, said that wasn't what they were seeking when they first saw it, that effectively they came across it by accident and started to look for more once they had seen it.
Yeah, the report gives us some insights into what they actually were looking for. But in one way, it's probably not so surprising to us that are familiar with, I suppose, how children and young people use the internet. And we know that, you know, often when children are curious about, you know, their sexual development or their sexuality, that they can often turn to, I suppose, online sources. And often that can be, I suppose, online pornography that they can turn to, or in this case, you know, online child sexual abuse. So, you know, there's no control, I suppose, over when you put in certain key terms, search terms, you know, what's going to show up. And that is hugely concerning.
It's worth saying that this survey was done on the dark web of people who admitted themselves that this is what they were doing, which is why the numbers are so significant, because they literally got thousands of respondents. And a large proportion of them indicated that they wanted to stop looking at this kind of imagery. I suppose what's most shocking is that a significant minority said that they didn't, that they were entirely happy that this is what they did.
Yeah, I think they had a separate survey, all right, that addressed that there was around 3,000 respondents to that who said that they wanted to actually continue to look at this type of material. So I suppose there's a lot, I suppose, that we can take from that. The 5,000 who've engaged with it and who this analysis is based on, or which this analysis is based on. I mean, I think that would suggest to me that, you know, the people that are looking at it, that they want to talk about it, they want to try to understand why they watch it. And it did indicate that some had tried to actually stop watching it as well, but that they struggled to do that.
Is there any insight into whether or not they believe it to be a victimless crime?
We don't seem to get that from the reports in the media on the actual research, but that's certainly something that, you know, everybody in the sector who works on this particular issue, you know, that is the message that we do try to get across, that, you know, while you may not be physically carrying out the abuse, but that watching it and being a consumer of that, you know, it is not a victimless crime. We know that the children who are abused in these images, that, you know, they are subjected to horrendous sexual abuse. It is real. And they live with knowing that their images of abuse are online, and they can often endure, I suppose, ongoing re-traumatization as well, you know, when these images surface. So it certainly is not a victimless crime. And I think that's something that we perhaps need to kind of talk about a lot more, because there does seem to be a detachment with that.
I suppose that the behavior and the viewing of images like this is, for most people, so grotesque and egregious and reprehensible that it's often difficult to even countenance why somebody would do it. But for whatever value it provides in trying to prevent them doing it, do we get much in the way of an insight? Do we have much pre-existing knowledge about why people consume these kind of images?
We don't really. And I suppose, you know, there is an absolute need to better understand perpetrator behavior. And, you know, surveys like this certainly do give us some insights which ought to inform, I suppose, a better policy and support response. I suppose perpetrators, it's not always easy to talk about them and to talk about the activity, but they really are an important and perhaps somewhat largely ignored part of the puzzle. Which is why, you know, research like this and insights like this, while they are harrowing to read, you know, it is important that we understand, you know, perpetrator behaviours and patterns.
Yeah, but you would wonder, I suppose the one thing about this, whatever about the revelations gained by the sheer number of people who responded to the survey, the fact that thousands of people are willing to answer a survey about their consumption of child pornography would make you believe, or might make one believe, that they don't quite take it as seriously as they should.
I certainly think that's in it. And that goes back to, I suppose, the point around, you know, it being a victimless crime, that it can be viewed as a victimless crime, whereas ourselves and other organisations would clearly say that it is not a victimless crime. But there is, you're right though, Anton, there's a huge amount of work to be done on creating that awareness around it. I mean, it's, you know, supply and demand. If there wasn't a demand there for, you know, people to be consuming this type of material, then it wouldn't be produced. So there's a huge bit of work to do, I suppose, to bring all those elements together, to for everybody to understand, you know, the whole ecosystem of online child sexual abuse.
Yeah, and as you say about that demand, we saw the case recently where that Irish citizen got 27 years for making a small fortune off exactly that demand and all of the industry that goes with it. Fiona Jennings, thank you very much for joining me on the show this morning. If you've been listening to that and you have been affected in any way by what you've heard, you can contact the ISPCC support line between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. Monday to Friday on 01522 4300, or Childline on 1-800-666-6666.